from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council. I am filling in for Tony Perkins on this afternoon. Well, the Democrats, like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, have insisted that the conditions in immigrations, customs, and enforcement detention centers are deplorable. In addition, they have claimed that detention of any sort now is inhumane. In just a moment, I'll talk with Republican Congresswoman Debbie Lesko of Arizona, who went to check out one of these detention centers firsthand. She'll report on what she saw at the Elroy, Arizona Detention Center, 2 hours from the border. In my second and third segments, the Drag Queen Story Hour at your local library or public school is the, quote, greatest grooming program ever devised, end quote. That's the contention of my second guest, John Euler, a clinical counselor who has worked with over 4,000 serial sexual predators behind bars. It will be an eye-opening conversation for sure. And at 42 past the hour, I've got a real treat for you. The Kendrick brothers have just released their latest Christian movie called Overcomer. Make sure to go to the website overcomermovie.com to watch the trailer and find a theater near you to support this great movie. Priscilla Shire of Going Beyond Ministries, author and actress who stars as the principal in the film, will join us. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. Follow me on Twitter at Sarah P. Perry or Tony at T. Perkins. Well, Democrats like Congresswoman AOC, as she's colloquially known, of New York, have insisted that conditions in ICE detention centers are ultimately deplorable. Now, we know otherwise, as does my next guest, who went to visit one firsthand. Joining me now to talk about her recent trip to an Immigrations, Customs, and Enforcement detention center in Elroy, Arizona, is Republican Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, who represents the 8th Congressional District of Arizona, serves on the Homeland Security Committee, the Judiciary Committee, and the Rules Committee in the United States House. Congresswoman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Well, we love hearing firsthand stories, and yours in particular, based on where you are in Arizona. You had a chance to visit this particular detention center, and we have been fed repeatedly the rhetoric that there are awful and inhumane conditions. Individuals who are drinking toilet water, individuals not permitted to shower. You had a personal experience here at one of these detention centers. So talk to us a little bit about what the conditions were like there.
Sure. No, the conditions were fine. They were, you know, so I went down, this was Monday. I drove down to Elroy, Arizona, and it's one of the detention centers that's used in Arizona to house migrants that have crossed our border illegally. And at that location, there was no families when I went. It was just adults. So they house both males and females there. And when they come in, when they're brought in by Customs and Border Protection, they said they could get as many as 75 come in a day. And they put up like in a, I guess they call it a triage area. So they first do health checkups on them, health screenings to make sure that they're okay. Then they invite them to take a shower. And then they go through a processing to determine if they're what level of security risk they are. So if they have a criminal record or a violent record of that type of sort, then they're put, they're dressed in a certain color of uniform. And so there's minimum, medium, and high risk individuals. And then they're basically segregated by that. But the facility that I saw was very clean. I went to see where they were initially brought in and checked, and it was very clean. I saw some of the women that were first brought in. They were sitting in a group area together in a cell. but then they were going to be processed and then given a, asked if they want to take a shower and that type of thing. I went to the cafeteria and I sat down and I ate with a number of the migrant women. I was in where there was a group of women that had come in that particular time. We had a whole tray of food. It's kind of similar to going into your, you know, when we were in elementary and high school and going to the student cafeteria.
Sure.
It was good food. They had salad. They had, I remember the cornbread. They had a hamburger. And I tasted all of it, and it was good. I went into the individual cells that the living arrangements where they sleep, and I tested the water. I pushed the button to turn on the sink water so they could drink water out of the sink. And they also hire dietitians there. They have a dietitian that makes up the food that they eat, so they make sure they have a good quality food, good calorie intake. They had a law library there.
Oh,
that,
wow.
That the migrants could use. They had facilities where they could meet with lawyers that either volunteered to help the people or the migrants were able to pay for lawyers, either one. They had regular library there. They had a number of the migrants that were living there were working to make money so that they're not just sitting around. They were able to do food work, all different types of work on the campus. And, it was a good facility. So I saw no problems, and all the people were friendly. Of course, you know, I'm sure the people that were there would rather not be there, but
right.
they chose to enter our country illegally, and we need to enforce our laws. And so everything was being run very well there.
So you were pretty much, it sounds like, given full and complete access. So you're fairly confident that this was not a situation in which they were sort of putting on a good show, but in fact is how a detention center like this is run on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, I was given pretty much full access, like you said, and I was walked to different areas, different people. I was able to talk, to the migrants if I wanted to. I usually just said hi or hello. I don't know if they spoke English. I don't speak Spanish. So I didn't go into long conversations or anything, but everybody looked healthy. Everybody looked well, they were showered and so on and so forth. And they were able to do reading or working if they wanted to, or like I said, there was a law library with computers. In there, they didn't have internet access, but they do have access to some law. I forget what they called it, but, like law books and statutes and that type of thing. So, they were being treated very well.
So after sort of a protracted legal battle, we know that now President Trump is going to be able to use military funds to continue the construction of the wall, to continue expanding it past its current point. And we know after being delayed, this is a priority of his. It's something that he talked about for a very long time. Do we know how many new miles of wall will go up and sort of within the time frame?
I don't know what the latest is, quite frankly. And if I did, I forgot. But it's good that we're able to do that because the wall isn't the entire answer, but it's part of the answer. It's part of the solution because it helps divert people to where the United States can process them better. And, I'm very happy that President Trump is doing everything possible to try to mitigate this crisis because it is a crisis at the border.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate that Congress has not changed the laws. I have introduced 6 immigration bills a couple weeks ago, and the most important one is actually raising the bar for asylum claims, because what's happening, as you may or may not know, are people, instead of evading the border patrol officers, they're actually turning themselves in and claiming asylum. And mm-hmm. they know that our laws, the cartels are telling them to do this, because they know that the bar is set so low that after that initial hearing, or the initial interview, I should say, that 90% of them are let in to the United States to then go on to the next process. And they're basically handed a piece of paper saying, okay, show up to court. Well, as you know, our immigration judges are backlogged. And so sometimes it could be years that people are here. And then once Absolutely. The people do actually get to court, only 11% of them are actually granted asylum in front of a judge. And that's the other thing I wanted to tell you. There's actually immigration judges that are housed right there at the Eloy Detention Center. So at that particular facility, they're actually processing these folks very, very quickly so that they can get in to see an immigration judge very quickly.
Oh, that's fabulous, which, of course, we know how lengthy processes like these can be. We know how backlogged they are. But this really does, for me, reinforce how, to a certain extent, really, and this was borne out by the first round of Democratic debates, the Democrats have turned this into a bit of a moral imperative. If you want law and order, if you require adherence to this nation's principles and its legal standings, its rules, its laws, they somehow paint this notion, this immigration crisis, this border crisis, which you've recognized, I think, appropriately, as somehow being immoral. So we're sort of swimming upstream, aren't we, with sort of a rhetoric that we're having to fight, because borders are essential to the yeah. establishment and maintenance of a sovereign country. Without borders, you have no country.
Well, I totally agree with you, Sarah. And we can be a compassionate country, like this Eloy Detention Center was treating these people very well. I also met the chaplain there, and they do services in all different languages. They bring in wonderful. Different pastors from different denominations, and they have different religions that actually come in and do services. So we're treating these folks compassionately, much more compassionately than the cartels do, I'll tell you that. But we do need a secure border. We do need a good immigration system, because what we have now is totally open, uncontrolled, and it's just not good for our country, and it's not good for the migrants, quite frankly, because the cartels are abusing them, as we heard from Doctors Without Borders. 1 in 3 women are being raped on the way up on their travel here. I mean, this is not good for anyone. So we need to change the laws, and you're right, some of my Democratic colleagues, the rhetoric is over the top. Jerry Nadler, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, calls the Border Patrol child abusers. This is awful.
Which does not move the ball in making sure that our sovereign nation stays a sovereign nation. Congresswoman Debbie Lesko of Arizona, always a great guest. Enjoy the rest of the congressional recess. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, coming up next, you've heard much about drag queen story hours at schools and libraries, but could you imagine that they are potentially worse than you ever thought? My next guest, John Euler, a clinical counselor, has worked with over 4,000 predators behind bars, and he has an opinion on what they really are. Next.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday to you.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C. And learn how you can, too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is where you can find our podcast. I encourage you to go there, visit some of our resources, read on some of our guests, and take the action steps that you find there. Before this next segment, speaking of our podcast, I want to encourage those of you who have small children with you to turn down the volume or press pause and listen to it later tonight, because what we'll talk about next is not appropriate for young ears. Brandon Showalter at the Christian Post wrote an article entitled "Drag Queen Story Hour, Greatest Grooming Program Ever Devised," counselor says. And I actually have a chance to talk to that counselor. My next guest, John Euler, a clinical counselor who's worked with over 4,000 serial predators. And he is urging parents to be vigilant after a Texas library hosted a drag queen story hour for kids featuring a reader who had a criminal record. John's a father of three. He is married to his high school sweetheart, who graduated from Epic Bible College, Biola University, with a BA in Christian education, Talbot School of Theology, where he studied in marriage and family ministries, and California State University, Fullerton, where he earned an MS in counseling. Of all the clinical populations with which he has worked, John's heart and expertise lies with those who wrestle with the effects of trauma, especially trauma resulting from ritualistic sexual abuse. For 11 years, John worked within the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections in a forensic clinical capacity, where he spent thousands of hours working within a treatment capacity with the full continuum of sex offenders, including many who were designated as sexually violent predators. Impressively, his in-depth clinical analysis within his forensic parole psychological evaluations were responsible for actually preventing the scheduled parole of at least 19 heinous child sexual offenders back into the community. John, so glad to have you on Washington Watch.
Sir, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So Drag Queen Story Hour is a bit of a social phenomenon. And what we used to think were individual and sort of grassroots, uncoordinated efforts to get drag queens into public venues has actually revealed itself to be a very coordinated effort through a national organization that began in San Francisco a few years ago. So we've talked about the foolishness of these Drag Queen Story Hours at libraries, public schools, but we have not yet delved into the notion that this is a grooming program. And here's why I think this is important, particularly for the parents who are going to be listening to this. As the Christian Post reported, parents in Texas have discovered that David Lee Richardson, who was participating in these Story Hour events for the Austin Public Library System over a past year, has a criminal record for prostitution. His drag queen name is Miss Kitty Litter. But an actual criminal record for prostitution and a year-long history with the Austin Public Library. Are you surprised that this individual is a sexual predator?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, there's been others that mass resistance has uncovered that are actual have offenses for child sex offending. So there's clearly predators, and I am so pleased to have you and others now really trying to alert parents to what's going on. I'm probably like the average parent. Once upon a time, I didn't know, because we don't think like that. That's probably from my years in prison. When people ask me about predators, how to begin to profile them. See, on the one hand, it's very difficult because by the time somebody becomes a predator, the last thing they're going to do is let you know they're a predator. And that's very important to know. Predators don't announce themselves because that would be a little self-defeating.
Sure.
However, by the time somebody becomes a predator, they have gone through very, very in my mind and what I've plotted out, very predictable stages of deviance. For those that are come from biblical perspective and those that are familiar with that, Romans chapter 1 describes a downward progression that becomes very permanent. We as Christians like to believe that no one is beyond redemption, no one is beyond hope. But unfortunately, we have we give mental assent to the authority of Scripture, but when it comes to asking, well, what does that mean when someone is given over to a reprobate mind? What does that mean?
Right.
And are they able to come back? Is there a point of no return? And if someone really reads Romans chapter 1, they will see that there is a point at which, just like Pharaoh hardened his heart and God hardened Pharaoh's heart.
Yes,
there's a point at which, right? There's a point at which someone can get, and science now, a number of good folks have looked at brains of psychopaths, and discovered, and you can Google this online, a simple Google search of brains of psychopaths, and you'll see the color imaging of psychopaths' brains, and you will see that two things are true. They don't operate in a normal fashion. And they never will. They are forever changed. Robert Hare of the Hare Psychopathy Checklist, I'm certified in that. Department of Corrections in Pennsylvania flew him out, and a number of us were hand-selected to be a part of that training. And as I was in that training, it was heartening to know that I didn't learn a lot in this sense, that I had really dug deep. Having started the nation's first intensive treatment program in solitary confinement, I was studying deeply. I wanted to know. I had to know because having worked with survivors, I had to know how and why somebody did what they did.
John, I'm so glad we have you for another segment because we have only started to scratch the surface on this. John Euler, licensed professional counselor, talking about what these Drag Queen Story Hours really are. Not entertainment, not the arts, not education or literacy, but grooming. We'll be right back after this break on Washington Watch.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. And we're here with John Euler, a licensed professional counselor who has unique experience giving advice, providing therapeutic services, developing programs in the field of sexual crimes and with sexual predators. So no one understands this issue better and really what is at the heart of the issue of seemingly innocuous, often publicized drag queen story hours than John. So, John, do you think, we've talked a little bit about sort of the sexual deviancy of the way the mind operates and how these individuals are given over to a certain way of thinking that is ultimately reprobate. I have to believe pornography has something to do with this.
100%. And I want people to understand that underneath all of sexual deviance, 100% of it is porn. Now, once upon a time, there was no porn, but there's always been sexual deviance. But in the year 2019, you can be rest assured that 100% of deviant men are accessing porn online. Most men, unfortunately, are accessing porn online. But you shall know them by their fruits, and you can look at somebody. If they're acting deviant, guess what? So what I want parents to understand is any man, drag queen, any man that would put on women's underwear, sorry to be graphic, and then put on a dress, we call that drag,
right.
A, is not your average guy. B, he didn't come up with that on his own. And C, he's been saturating his mind in porn. That's the reality. Now, having worked with predators of all sorts, the one thing I never would have guessed is this. That 100% of them, and they have floated myths out there. We've heard that they're sexually abused. These sophisticated ones are not sexually abused. That's a myth they put out there. How can I define that? You can go on to survivorsupport.net, my website, or my Twitter page, and I help people understand that. But in a nutshell, if you've been sexually abused, you will not turn around and abuse others. You are hypervigilant. Now, we understand child-on-child offenses, But what you will see is this. You will see a natural progression of difficulty through junior high and high school years. You will see a paper trail on that child. For an adult to get into adulthood that's well-adjusted and no criminal history or no significant psychiatric history, now we're talking the majority of drag queens, you're talking about someone that has not been sexually abused. How do you know? Because they give no signs. A survivor has very distinctive characteristics. These men don't have those characteristics. They try to mirror that at times, but intuitively they don't have that. Working in the prison with these guys, come to find out that once their mind turns, they hunger and thirst after offending. That's where their mind's at, and therefore they plan. And what they decided, what they discovered, it's easy for me to see it now, is they decided to float a trial balloon for two reasons. One, to see how easily they could access kids and pull a number, pull the wool over parents' eyes. And two, and this is the most crucial thing, civic leaders need to understand this. If you think these guys are just going into libraries to read, no, they're grooming kids. But there's something larger. Now, do I know definitively? No, but everything within me says this. They're checking out the community. Because if the community doesn't protect their kids, guess what's going to happen? And where are they going to go? They'll go into all sorts of venues, all sorts of employment, job-related employment, where they can access kids. The vast majority of them communicate with each other.
So it's the perfect testing ground.
There you go. You want to increase the number of sex offenders in your community, you welcome Drag Queen Story Hour. What, is that homophobic? Not at all. The first website I put together was churchprotect.org. That's my greatest concern. The greatest deviant mind are those that are religiously oriented predators, because they fool churches. They will target churches. So this is not a lifestyle focus of mine. The drag queens and others will say I'm phobic, and I'm not at all. I'm all about child protection. And if you go on the website at churchprotect.org or survivorsupport.net or my Twitter page, you will see I have a very easy assessment tool that can begin to help you understand. And parents can begin to ask these performers. It's very, very simple. It's two things. Will you fully identify will you give us your identification and reveal who you are, reveal your identity, and will you condemn? And I've got some pictures on my site, and they're very telling, but they were taken at different events. Men that are naked with young boys. And will you condemn a man for getting naked with another person's child?
And I have, graphic but necessary questions.
Yeah, that's right. So any parent that takes a child to an event like Drag Queen Story Hour, you are tempting fate. There's a good chance it's inevitable that predators are right there masquerading.
Thank John Euler. Through his Twitter feed, on his website, because this is an individual with unique experience in the field of clinical psychology and specifically as relates to these individuals masquerading as artists, but truly, in many instances, sexual predators and deviants. I encourage you all to also speak to your decision makers across the county, in the country, in your state, commissioners, supervisors, those that hold the checkbook, and make some noise. You're listening to Washington Watch. I have the incredible Priscilla Schur coming up on her next movie.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry. I'm sitting in for Tony Perkins today on this Friday edition. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, but don't go just yet because there's a movie that you're going to want to see this weekend. I have the pleasure of talking to one of my favorite evangelists, who is a wife and a mom and an actress and a ministry leader, and she has accomplished quite a bit in the same number of years that I am now. And I won't share precisely how many those are, but I'll give you a hint. Our birthdays are only a few months apart. Well, Overcomer is the sixth movie from the Kendrick brothers that hit the silver screen this weekend, following on the heels of their 2015 release, War Room, which was number one in box office theaters across North America in its second week of release. So clearly, the Kendrick brothers knew that people were hungry for this message. But some of their other films, and you'll recognize these two, are Courageous, Fireproof, Facing the Giants, and Flywheel. Based on the book of Ephesians, Overcomer asks the viewers, where do you place your identity? Life changes overnight for Coach Harrison, portrayed by Alex Kendrick, when his high school basketball team's state championship dreams are crushed under the weight of unexpected news. When the largest manufacturing plant in town suddenly shuts down and hundreds of families begin moving away, John must come to grips with the challenges facing his family and his team. So urged by the school's principal, played by my guest, Priscilla Shire, to fill in and coach a sport he doesn't know or like, John is frustrated and questioning his worth. Man, have I been there. Until he crosses paths with a student struggling with her own journey. Joining me now is Priscilla Shire, an international speaker and Bible teacher. New York Times bestselling author and actress with credits including War Room and 2018 smash hit I Can Only Imagine. She and her husband Jerry lead Going Beyond Ministries, which provides spiritual report and resources to the body of Christ, and is the daughter of Pastor Tony Evans in Dallas. Her most recent book is Radiant, His Light, Your Life for Teen Girls and Young Women. Priscilla, I'm so excited to have you on Washington Watch.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad to talk with you. Thanks for making time for me.
Well, I got to tell you that this concept, the notion of identity, is one I am so passionate about because my kids, I've got a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 10-year-old, and they are just now in that phase where they are starting to ask themselves how they compare to their friends, how they measure up in school, how they define their identities, and they understand intuitively that God loves them. We teach them this. We have reinforced it over and over again, so they get that message. But the figuring out of who their identity is authored by is something they're having trouble really figuring out. So was it that notion of identity and the theme of this movie that really spoke to you as a mom?
Yes, and I'm so glad you brought up the ages of your kids because you and I are right in the throes of the exact same season of their lives. My sons are 16 and 15 and 10. And
so oh, my gosh.
Right about the same ages of yours. That oldest one's about to turn 17, but just really about the same as yours. And like you, I'm just watching them sort of hobble along as they discover who they are. And the problem is that when we were growing up, our need to compare and to be included, it was sort of segmented to different physical aspects of our life, meaning when we were at school or we were in, you know, on the track team. But now, because of the blessing of social media, our kids are inundated with it 24/7 when they're at their home, when they're riding in their car with their parents, when they're supposed to be having their mind on other things. They've got this panic of, am I getting likes? Am I accepted by this group? Is my selfie lit perfectly enough for people to appreciate it and applaud it? So whereas you and I may have had a little reprieve from the struggle, our children don't. And that's where we're finding many of them and us as adults floundering because we're inundated in a way we haven't been in previous generations.
Oh, boy, that social media battle is a compelling one, and it is a constant one. I am always doing checks on their phones and devices, which they hate. I'm the mom that it's very easy for the kids to hate. And I've got to tell you, the likes and the Instagram followers and the retweet for a like and all of the other sort of social media speak that goes to that notion of who they are. Boy, the theme of this movie just so resonates with me, and understanding that this is a story about a young woman and about a coach, both who are struggling with who they really are, I just find so compelling. So tell me about this character, about the principal. What can you tell us about her?
Yes. Well, Olivia Brooks, who is the character I have the privilege to play, is this polished professional woman that you can tell cares very deeply about the technicalities of her job and that everything runs smoothly and in excellence under her care. But the great thing about her is that she keeps pulling off this professional veneer to make sure she is actually caring about the hearts of students. So she sits down, particularly with Hannah, who is the main character of the film. And even while Hannah's, you know, just talking about the regular rhythms of her everyday life in terms of school and then coaching or being on the track team, Olivia just keeps reading between the lines and taking the opportunity to see the pain in the student's heart. And I love that picture that even in our corporate settings, while we do our jobs with technical excellence, we can be asking God, listen, Lord, while I talk to this coworker or while I'm speaking to this student or patient as a doctor, as I'm dealing with this client as a lawyer, would you give me opportunity, Father, to kind of see between the lines of what they're saying to any opportunity I might have to offer encouragement to them or comfort, or even in the film, you see my character literally take the opportunity to lead her into a relationship with Jesus Christ. And wonder how many times we have that chance if we'll just, you know, stop being so impatient with the conversations we have and so professional, if God might roll out the red carpet for opportunities to march into those settings and actually introduce himself to people.
Oh, I love it. And I love how, as women, we are so relational, right? So I used to hear my grandmother say, men are vocational, women relational. Well, we also have jobs, but the way we interact with people is completely different than a man. So as a female principal to a young woman who is, in this particular phase of her life, really struggling with who she is, that so resonates with me because I'm watching this so much happen under my own roof. And these are kids who have the advantage of a personal relationship with Christ, and they come to us for wisdom, and yet they still struggle with it. So it really is this tremendously universal theme. So I have to ask you now, from the celebrity standpoint, because you do so many things and you do them well. You are an author and you are an actress and you are a ministry leader and an evangelist. And by the way, for our listeners who may have not yet seen her preach, oh, let me tell you, it is a goosebump-giving speech. Your passion for the Word, your passion for Christ, and where you lay out the truth. Man, I don't want to listen to anybody if I don't open my Bible who's going to talk about Christ, because that's really what it is, right? That's the guidebook right there. So how, tell me particularly how you got involved from this ministry background to getting involved in these movies with the Kendrick brothers.
Yeah, it's been one of the sort of shocks of our ministry life and our family life that we've been filming. It's never something that I aspired to or was looking for. It just, because it wasn't my world. It wasn't my wheelhouse. I was just in ministry until one day when the Kendrick brothers called me. That's what happened. They called actually when they were making Courageous to see if I might consider a role. And I told them no, it wasn't a good time with what was going on with my kids right then. We were at the end of a school year and we were homeschooling at the time. And so didn't want to do it then, but I still partnered with them. They were writing The Resolution for Men as a companion book, and they asked if I would write The Resolution for Women. And so I did write that, and that's sort of how we became first acquainted. But then when they were writing War Room, they called me towards the end of writing that script and said, Priscilla, we've been writing the lead character for this film. Her name's going to be Elizabeth Jordan. And every time we write her lines, we are thinking to ourselves, what would Priscilla Shire say? That's what we're writing. You've been the prototype for her voice. So we just want to call and ask you, will you do it? And at first, both my husband and I laughed out loud. And I said, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? You know I'm not an actress, right? And it's, you know, I'm in ministry. That's not what I do. And I even, by the way, gave them the names of some actresses that I really admire and said, here's some people you can call. And they said, Priscilla, listen, before you say no, just pray about it and read the script, because we think when you do, you will see that it is not just a movie, it's ministry. And of course, I read that day what anybody who saw War Room has seen, and that is that that movie wasn't just entertainment, it was ministry.
Yes,
and the same
absolutely.
Thing for I Can Only Imagine, and the same thing for Overcomer. I think when people see it, they will realize that while they were entertained and they did have their heart warmed from this endearing story, and they did laugh, more than that, they're going to come away from it asking the question, who or what have I allowed to define me? Because only the Creator should have the authority to define His creation. But we oftentimes give away that authority illegitimately to success or to achievement or to titles or to the approval or lack thereof of other people. And the whole theme of the movie is to remind you that you are not your past. You are not your behavior. You are not your weaknesses. You are not your inclinations. Those things may have been a part of your experience, but that's not who you are. Only your God, your Father, has the right to tell you who you are.
Oh, my gosh. I hope everyone listens to that and writes it down, because it's something that everyone needs to hear, because we all struggle with it at one point or another.
Yeah.
So you gave a great interview to the Christian Post a couple of weeks ago, and you were talking about the redefinition of these biblical truths and the effect that they have on our kids. And in the couple of minutes we have left, would you explain a little bit what kind of an effect you're seeing?
Absolutely. Well, we are living in a post-Christian era, as you know. In other words, you know, several decades ago, even if people were not Christ followers, they still had a general appreciation for biblical morals and biblical tenets. Well, that's not true anymore. In this day and age, if you stand firm on the truth of God, you are ostracized, you are ridiculed, you're picked on, and you're pushed to the margin. And so our children are growing up in a culture that we did not grow up in. They're growing up in a culture where to stand firm in their faith, they will literally be laughed at. They will literally be looked at as peculiar in a way that we were not in the 80s or the 70s or even the early 1990s. And so now our children are really having to have the boldness of Daniel in a way that is unique to this particular day and age. And it's going to be a struggle for them. And hopefully parents and school leaders and churches are going to come alongside them to help gird them up and fortify their backbone for this culture in this time.
Boy, it really does reinforce the necessity of having parents who prioritize biblical inerrant truth, because the first people that our kids learn from is us. And if that falters, if we fall down on the opportunity to set standards that last forever because they are based on truth that lasts forever, man, I tell you what, these are years you cannot get back, as I am learning way too quickly. It is something that hits you faster than you think it will hit you. I love what Dr. Gary Chapman, who wrote one of my favorite books, author of The Five Love Languages, about the movie. He said, "Overcomer hits a central issue in marriages, families, church, and culture: identity. When we find our identity in Christ, we don't look for it in other places." Priscilla, I am so glad that you've made this movie. If people want information, if they want to buy tickets in advance, where do they go?
Well, listen, overcomermovie.com is the place you can go to see where the theaters are. But listen, any theater near you is likely playing it. It has been spread far and wide, which is a testament, I've got to tell you, to the powerful generation we're living in, where faith-based films are being taken so seriously that they're not just segmented to a little theater here or there. Nope, they're pretty much everywhere. Praise the Lord for the influence that these faith-based films are having on a generation.
Oh, Priscilla, I could talk to you for quite a long time, but unfortunately we are at the bottom of the hour. I'm so glad that you joined us today on Washington Watch. For everyone listening, go to overcomermovie.com, where you can find out where this excellent movie is playing. Make it the same success that War Room was. Let's get this truth into the hands of people who need to hear it. Thank you to Priscilla. Priscilla, our best wishes on the premiere of this movie. We hope you come back and visit us again on Washington Watch in the future. Thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. Society's rejection of God has had staggering ripple effects, according to what Priscilla has said in her Christian Post interview. And so it is our opportunity to reject that redefinition and to keep those principles. And we're using the media to do it. This is one of the things I love about supporting faith-based films. And we've seen quite a number of them that have really hit a nerve with individuals at the box office. And I think that speaks to a bigger issue, that people are hungry for truth, that they are rejecting darkness. We have plenty of that, but we know there is only one author of the light. And using this kind of a medium to transmit a gospel message, whether or not it results in that gospel being accepted, every seed is planted through the ministry of these Christian filmmakers and Christian actors. So go out. We encourage you to go out and support an endeavor like Overcomer Movie. Go to overcomermovie.com for more information on where this individual show is going to be playing this weekend. Don't marginalize God. Do not marginalize him, but expand his influence in your life. Make sure your kids do it too. And above all, remember, your identity comes from him. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I've been Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We'll see you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.